Try not to shout.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, that's all right. We haven't started yet.
Yeah, we have.
Oh, we have.
But it's a very good start, that try not to shout. I think that's relevant to the blog. Always,
oh, sorry. Have we started?
We have. It's always
but you haven't done the date.
I haven't. I didn't know you were going to suddenly sort of say exciting things like that. Anyway, it's the Groucho Club podcast. It's an early podcast because it's Tuesday the 31st of May because Copstick, my co-host, Craig Copstick, I'm John Fleming, is going to...
Fanny and Johnny Craddock of comedy podcasting.
And which one is a Fanny? You have to guess. And she's going to Kenya for her charity Mama Biashara on Friday. We're in the Mama Biashara shops allowed there. People may start buying things in the background in a loud way. And as always, we've never actually discussed what we're going to do, really. We haven't prepared anything.
I think it's better that way. It's exciting. There's a frisson.
Ooh, get her.
Yeah, that is your actual French.
I love it when you speak French.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, say some more, go on.
La plume de ma tante. Auprès de ma blonde, il fait bon, fait bon, fait bon.
And wasn't it George W. Bush who said that?
I feel I should start with a heartfelt apology for having attributed Cox and Box to Gilbert and Sullivan.
I was shocked when I read this.
It was not W.S. Gilbert.
It was Arthur Sullivan.
Not W.S. Gilbert. Yeah. They sometimes, they had an open relationship and they sometimes went off and did things, separately and with other people.
They sometimes had a tiff.
Not a tiff, but...
This is going to segue into something else.
No, it's not.
Right.
Except that that was a Facebook comment. Was it?
Yes, it was.
You see where I'm going with this, John?
Yeah,
Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook,
but,
there's...
So someone we both know, and I can't remember who it was, but it was very, very erudite. Oh, no, you don't know. It's Chris Linseed.
Yeah,
you know,
no, Linseed, I don't... Linseed, as in oil.
L-I-N-C-E with an apostrophe.
Lancé.
Yeah, Lancé.
Lancé. That is also your actual French.
I never thought about you. It's Lancé.
Lancé.
Lancé, which means...
Lancé means lanced. As in boil.
As in large,
no,
large penis, no.
But I'm close, sure also yeah. Close to lycée, which is French, your actual French for school.
And he's a very good writer anyway, Lancé.
Yep.
And he probably listens to this. Well, he must do if he corrected you. Hello, Chris, how are you?
Hello, how are you? I'm sorry, I'll try not to get anything wrong this time.
Oh, Facebook. Oh, that's a slicky
link, isn't
it?
Yeah, exactly. You see what I was doing there, John?
Oh, online tiffs. That's
yes.
It all comes
you see,
together.
You see, I set them up, you knock them down, Johnny.
Because when I arrived...
I set up my fanny and you knock it down.
Yes, and I use my Johnny to do it. No, we're not going to go. No.
We already have, John.
Indeed,
too late.
Yes, I never thought about Johnny being dodgy as well. Anyway, I was saying to you when I arrived,
it's a voyage of discovery, this podcast, isn't it? It's a voyage of comedic discovery.
And then the Galapagos, where it's just strange species are discovered.
Hitherto thought completely unfunny, but we drag them out into the light of day and insist people laugh.
And they're still not funny. I never get embroiled in these Facebook tiffs that go on.
You've got embroiled in a Facebook tiff?
I've got embroiled in a... Well, I haven't got embroiled.
Tell me more.
I was going to say a mild coffee. Because I am, as you know...
The mildest of men.
And I got accused of being, an anti-Semitic Holocaust denier. And I didn't respond very much. I did a blog about it, but
yep.
I thought... I think if you get accused of anything, just ignore it, because it's
absolutely.
A school ground fight.
And to be fair, I've had my share. So what
is
do
that
you...
Is that going into a song? I've had my share.
Oh, yeah,
your way.
Oh, yes, my way.
So even as we speak, recording this fine podcast listened to by one man in Albuquerque, there's a tiff going on online between Christian Talbot, or Talbot.
Talbot.
Talbot. I'm not even going to attempt... What's her name?
Ariane Shireen.
You see, you do it so much better than me. I'm always told off for
Ariane.
I know.
See if she was in Glasgow, she'd be Ariane. Ariane, mon, get your head washed.
I was thinking that today. I mean, there's no way she's going to get called Ariane in Glasgow.
No.
I mean, Edinburgh's pushing it, because Edinburgh, you're a bit above such, very posh Edinburgh, but Glasgow, you're dead.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, for most things.
Even
anyway.
For having a name like Ariane.
My dear.
Nobody's got a name like Ariane in Glasgow.
Shireen is having some sort of... Are you doing this, Shireen? Anyway,
moving.
We're
strange, stop gabbling, yes.
Unusually getting off the subject. Poor old Ariane did her second piece for the Spectator this week.
I can't believe she's only been around for 2.5 fucking minutes and she's got a piece for the Spectator.
She's been around for 14 years. She's been writing comedies for BBC. She's been My Family...
She wrote my family.
Well, she wrote. She was one of the writers on. You know, it was one of those rooms where you have about 10,000 writers in.
Oh, my God.
It impresses the Americans. Have you not read her biography, www.ariannechourine.com?
I try never to read the biography of anyone who looks like they might be a lot more successful than me. It makes me even more bitter than I am.
Well, this is a slinky tip page. You should listen to this one. So there's a brief a short biography on the front page.
Yeah.
There's then a longer biography. And at the bottom of the longer biography, there's a link to a timeline biography, which I think actually is more interesting.
Jesus,
because,
titty fucking Christ.
Because it says...
Enough already.
Because it says I was expelled from school and between the ages of, I think it's 16 and 19, hung out with Duran Duran at their studio and played piano on three of their tracks. I don't think this appears anywhere else. Really? It might do, but it might not. But it's
okay, I'm beginning, can I just say, I'm beginning to lose all sympathy for or liking of Ariane. Ariane,
Shereen.
I'm going to call it now that I see she's had such a successful life already, and she's only about 22. I'm going to call her Ariane just to upset her. So tell us about Ariane and Christian Talbot.
Are you going to demand money for that 22 reference? She's only 22.
Possibly.
Anyway, so
move
on. Anyway, she wrote a thing about which was headlined. I'm kind of worried.
Racist jokes are funny.
Yeah, which obviously was written by the Spectator, not the headline, not her.
You know, I do sort of feel her pain because it's a bit like me making a few mild-mannered comments and you sticking some inflammatory headline on your blog and all hell breaks loose in my life.
I think we might be referring to a specific incident.
Well, I think we're referring to more than one. Anyway, carry on about Ariane.
Anyway, basically, the argument basically was you can't say all jokes about race are racist. There might be jokes about race, but they're not racist.
I think she's right.
Christian Talbot disagrees, I believe, and on the basis, I'm not quite sure on the basis. Anyway, there's a long...
On the basis that he's Irish and he doesn't make people making jokes about potatoes.
Yes, but in fact, and I haven't got it in front of me...
I'm Seamus O'Shaughnessy, the leprechaun. I've got what a lot of fellas wish they had. And what's that? I'm a lovable lad.
Please send all complaints to her, not to me.
With one eye up and one eye down, and me nostrils twitching all around, both ears close against the ground, I'm the poacher of Bally's Slapperdashamuckery.
If you go on for a quiet time, I might be able to find the relevant thing, but in the comments section under the Spectator blog, there is a cracking joke, an Irish joke, which is wonderful. But
tell us this Irish joke.
I can't because it's so complicated.
Oh,
but
you've forgotten it.
Well, no, it actually has to be said properly because it's to do with a pun. But
okay, and in an Irish accent?
But yes, absolutely. It's about an Irish accent. And in fact, it's actually a joke about Irish people, an Irish accent, which is actually complementary to the Irish. And so it's actually not people say racist, it's not racist,
yes.
It's xenophobic.
Yep.
It's not against the Irish, this joke. It's actually an almost pro-Irish joke, but it's about the Irish, but it's not. It's not racist. It's racial. So you can tell. And someone, Bernard O'Leary, who used to write for The Skinny, commented somewhere, I think he hates me.
I like him.
I think in Facebook he commented something about... he's always thought it was strange that you can make jokes about Yorkshire accents,
uh-huh.
but you can't make... using the accent.
Yep.
But you can't make jokes using a West Indian accent
mm-hmm.
because it's racist.
People are very, very, very picky that way.
Yeah. And in fact, what's her name?
Ariane.
It says because she's she's half Indian, half American, but she can't help the American bit. I mean, she says, you know, she doesn't answer what's wrong with doing Indian accent, which I don't either.
Yeah.
But I am encouraging to write a song involving an Indian accent.
you have to say there's a...
It depends how it's like called. Some race jokes, some jokes about race aren't racial, and racist, rather. Some racial jokes aren't racist. And if you use an accent, it can be funny and warm and lovely. I'll get criticised here, but
yep.
you know, big fat black ladies from Brixton saying, talking in a nice warm West Indian accent are inherently nice and cuddly and lovable.
Yes.
And there's nothing racist about it. I would say the definition of racist is that you're encouraging people to dislike or
yes.
to demean or to look down
yes.
on another race.
Because one of the basic tenets of comedy, one of the things yeah. that you laugh with at or around
yeah.
is differences.
Yes.
You're different from me, that's funny.
Yeah.
You know, I've got frizzy black hair, you've got a slap head, that's funny. Well, it's not that funny.
It might be demeaning.
But talk to slap heads.
Yeah.
Well, you see, one of the things my grandmother always says is grass never grows on a busy street.
So I've got a busy head?
No, grass never grows on a bit. It's metaphorical, John. It's metaphorical. Never mind. Moving on.
No, yes, I think there's you can do a lot of racial jokes which aren't in any way demeaning to the people you're telling them about. You can tell jokes about the Scots. I mean, this actually is a racist joke.
Go on, I'm Scottish, I'm giving you the right to tell this racist, allegedly joke.
Can I point out, I'm a Highlander, you're a Lowland, you have no right to give me anything.
Shut up!
Anyway, I mean, poor old Prince Philip, who everyone loves for telling racist jokes, was in, I think it was Oban or somewhere like that, or Fort William or somewhere, where you're the voice of British Rail, I believe.
Fort William.
And he talked to a driving instructor and apparently said to the driving instructor, how do you keep the locals sober long enough to teach them how to drive?
Marvellous!
Which actually is demeaning and attacking the Scots, but was... social realism, I'm
absolutely.
I don't know, but I think that's the basic thing. You could basically what who?
Ariane.
Basically, what she was saying was that I'm going to get killed. What she was saying was basically that you can tell racial jokes, and racial jokes are not necessarily racist. Where the PC brigade would say pretty much that any racial joke is racist.
That's
bollocks.
But what the the Chatterazzi say you can't do any jokes on or around race, on or around sex, you know, male. Well, you can make jokes about men, but not about women. On or around, there's almost religion. You can't. The essence of humour is difference, and there is not really a joke without some kind of but. And I don't mean but as in the conjunction. I mean but as in end. You need something for a joke to push against.
But as in bottom?
Sort of.
That's a bit sexist.
You need something for the joke to butt up against to give it its power. Even, you know, albeit it's just a silly little... a silly little piece of nothing.
Yeah. I mean, we never want to go anywhere near the subject of rape, obviously. But,
of course not.
But, I mean, people say you can't make jokes about rape. And I understand and sympathise, and 90% of the time you're right. You mustn't and shouldn't do that. But you can. If it's told in the right way, you can do that.
Yes. I mean, I think...
And especially if you're a woman, it has happened to you, that's what you said.
It all depends on on your standpoint. I mean, I genuinely... I would always have put my hand on my heart and said you can make jokes about anything at all. Because the minute you say you can't make a joke about that, whatever that is a very dangerous thing. There's somebody, I can't remember who it was, said, if you want to know who controls you, find out who it is that you can't make jokes about. So I think anything and everything should be up for grabs. However, I freely admit, and I think I've told you this before, that I was once trapped in an underground radio studio with Bobby Davro. We were making... There wasn't a war going on or anything. I'm not that old. But we were making a television programme. And it called something like Bobby Davro's Hit Squad. And I was part of the Hit Squad. It was a hidden camera programme. And we were in an underground music studio, radio studio. And while we were waiting for the hit fodder to be brought to the microphone, we were making conversation. And we didn't really know one another at all. And Bobby was telling jokes, because that's what he does. And one of his jokes went as follows. What turns fruit into vegetables? Answer, AIDS. Now, I had a reaction that I'd never had to... I was outraged, horrified, angry. And yet, when I told people about it afterwards, and some of my gay friends fell about the place laughing. Oh, that's very funny. I went, no, it's not. And I don't know why. I don't know why I thought it wasn't funny. Maybe I thought it wasn't funny because it was Bobby Davro telling the joke. Maybe if some screaming queen, after a few Proseccos over a lovely candlelit, just in fun, went, oh, my God, and told the joke. I don't know. I don't know. But I was outraged. So it's not... I'm not as open-minded as I think I am, obviously. But it's a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous road to go down, stopping people making jokes about anything. Because that at which or about which you cannot laugh is something very, very scary indeed.
I mean, in the Spectator blog thing, what's her name?
Ariane.
Says that she, as an Asian person, as an Indian origin person, doesn't object to jokes about Asians owning corner shops.
Yes.
Because there's nothing wrong with owning. It celebrates the entrepreneurial spirit, if you want to say it that way.
Absolutely.
And if I because I've been around a bit. I produced a Jerry Sadowitz TV show yonks ago for the No Gay organisation, and obviously the director phoned me from the editing suite.
Yes.
Checking a couple of jokes, and one of them I can't do justice to the joke, and obviously he told it much better than me. But the joke basically was, and this would have been around 1990-ish. Was basically you go into these corner shops, and I don't think he said Asian, but he did the accent, which probably didn't help. But,
kind of goodness gracious
me. So you go into these corner shops, and the people serving you get younger and younger. Mm. Because you go in, and instead of the adult singing, they put a child on the counter, so you get a 15-year-old serving you. The next time you go in, you get like a 7-year-old serving you. And then he said, well, bloody soon, there'll be embryos serving you. They'll be sort of slurping around behind our counter trying to give you change and things. And the way he told it was very, very funny. And the director said, is this okay to put in? And I said, yes, because it's not actually engendering hatred against Asians who have corner shops. It's actually social observation, really. And I thought it was very funny. And in fact, in the Spectator blog, the lady who's called...
Ariane.
I'm going to get killed for this. Says, and I've not seen it, but she showed me online. It's on YouTube. There's a joke by Paul Chowdhury, who's an Asian...
Yes.
Doing a joke about a Nigerian toilet attendant and doing the accent. So he does the accent, and I could criticise the joke for going on a bit long. It needs about 30 seconds chopped off, but you couldn't really criticise the accent. But the whole... It's not really a... You're laughing at the accent, really. You are laughing at the accent, but the fact that an Asian is doing a Nigerian... Somehow, no one complains about it.
Yeah.
So.
But if you're talking about one of our whiteies, one of we whiteies, poor, benighted...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, raged against whiteys, said it would have been...
So, I mean, Asians can tell jokes about Asians, Scots can tell jokes about Scots, Irish can tell jokes about Irish, but if you start crossing the lines, then for some reason, and I don't understand what it is, and I'm trying to avoid going into blacks in America, but I think I might drift into this bit.
Go on, drift, John. You're drifting.
The only
let yourself go.
I used to write for the Huffington Post, who are very incompetent, but there you go. And the only article they never printed of mine was one that used the N-word.
Oh, right.
Because I was discussing the use of the N-word and in a cold, calculated, not offensive way. It was to do with the use of language. And I have never understood why, and it's not an original thought, in, let's say, American films, if you get a black comedian or a black actor, that black person can call another black person a nigger. But if you're a white person, you can't use that word.
Oh, exactly.
So the word itself is only offensive in certain circumstances. So it's like and there's all sorts of odd things. I think scope, is it scope? Used to be the Spastic Society.
Yes, yes.
And the reason they changed it to scope, which means nothing at all from the Spastic Society, is because the Spastic Society, felt that spastics was an offensive word.
Yes.
But... It's only an offensive word because people in playground... There's nothing wrong with the word, and then there was nothing wrong with the word before. Yeah. And in fact, as far as the N-word goes, I mean, it's right in the middle. It's uncut out of the Dam Busters film.
Yes.
Because the central dog, and it is a central dog... who gets?
It's called nigger.
Indeed. And it was made in, I don't know when it was made, 1953 or something, 1956. Perfectly acceptable. And in fact, someone argued that... The only time I've ever felt sorry for the Metropolitan Police was during the Stephen Lawrence inquiry when one of the policemen used the word coloured. Exactly. And he was talking, I believe he was talking about a non-African origined person. And he said, well, I don't understand what's wrong with the word coloured because you're black, he's white, he's coloured. Now, I understand the logic of it, which is that white people are coloured as well.
Yep.
But it's not... It's a way of... And I think this particular discussion was about identification. So
Also because at various times in history...
Yeah.
And but it tends to have started in America and then drifted across the rest of the eventually white world. Not that America really is a white country, remembering the natives... the Native Americans, but you know, at one point there was in fact There was a book being discussed this morning on Radio 4, and the book is called Negroland. And the woman who wrote it was brought up in an area called, in America, called Negroland. And she's specifically calling her book Negroland because now it is a kind of a... I think I've talked to you about this before. We have a lovely, lovely little lady called Bridget who comes in here. She is... she's 87, 86. And she is... She's from the west of Scotland. She spent most of her life in children's... Early life in children's homes. She's the most wonderful, resilient, cheery, lovely woman. She's almost blind. She's almost deaf. She's got half a hand. And when she came... She used to come in here and she was talking to me because we both talk proper, like Glaswegians.
Paisley.
Oh, I know. John, please, don't keep dragging me down. Don't drag me down, John. And she said to me one time, she went, here, listen, Kitty, she calls me Kitty.
Who could blame her?
What? Went, how do I call them? And she was worried that she would step out of line because in the shop we have the lovely Letitia, who's from Ghana, the lovely Suad, who's from Morocco, and she went, listen, how do you call them? Like, if she, I can't say Negro. Can I say coloured? And if she's coloured, she black. Because if she's, what do I call? So, you know, we got the two of them down, and I said, well, what do you want to be called? But I find offensive is that a perfectly lovely old lady like Bridget is kind of frozen in worry about upsetting people with a word, just a word. You know, let's face it, most black people are not black, they're very dark brown.
Absolutely,
they're,
yes.
You know, and it's all, there's all shades of everything, of everything. And because, as you say, at some point, the people who used the word used, you know, first of all, I suppose the N-word was always quite a negative thing because it's a southern, it's the word Negro said. It's a bastardization of the word Negro said in a Southern American accent.
Except it had been Agatha Christie wrote a book called Ten Little Niggers.
Yes.
In, I guess, the 30s or 40s.
But that was... that's.
And there was nothing objectionable to that at all. But when it became objectionable, it had to be changed to Nine Little Indians.
Yes.
And then that became objectionable. Yep. So now it's called Nine Little Something Else's.
Yeah, it's a Ten Little...
Oh, so nine, terribly sorry.
Oh, no, now it's called And Then There Was None.
That's right, yes, just in case something else becomes. Yeah. So in case you say Frenchman, that becomes unacceptable or something.
But, you know, as time goes by, you know, words... Because there's always this thing of, like, the gay community have reclaimed the word queer and the word dyke.
Yes.
And but only I'm allowed to call myself a dyke. You're not allowed to call me a dyke. It's really turning language into a terrible... A horrible weapon of kind of thought control.
Yeah. I mean, and also someone, I'm not sure I really went for this argument, but someone was saying it's ridiculous that the word nigger is unacceptable, but the word black is acceptable, so you have to call people black, because it actually is the same word. It means the same thing.
Yes.
And also, I had a friend, another Asian friend, of Indian extraction, from Liverpool, as it happens, but and she was categorised on forms as being black, and she was saying, I'm not remotely black.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm from Liverpool, but my parents were from Northwest India. I'm not remotely black. I think I might have mentioned it before, a friend of mine is in Italy.
Lucky friend.
An English friend who married an Italian, and her son goes to an English language school in Italy, and he wrote some essay about Britain, and he was told he can't use the word black because the word black is offensive. He had to say Afro-American.
Yeah.
And he said, they're not Afro-American.
Exactly.
They're from the West Indies.
Exactly.
They're not African. They're not American.
Yes.
And he said, no, you can't say black, which was ridiculous. I mean, what's that about?
It is. What's that about?
So you have a situation where a woman from Liverpool whose parents were Indian from Northwest India, a nice, lovely, lovely colour, has to call herself black. It's ridiculous.
It's It is. And, you know, I do kind
it
of
It is
think...
like people from the south of Scotland calling themselves Scottish, when in fact they're clearly Sassenachs, like Paisley
I
or Glasgow.
I think you'll find that you lot, who were busy sailing out and hiding in your fucking caves, were only kept safe by my lot, the Kerrs, or the Border Reavers, as they were known, keeping the damned English out.
Are you a Kerr?
I'm a Kerr.
Oh, there's Kerrs in my family.
No, not Kerr.
K-E-R-R.
Kerr. Kerr. See it? Kerr.
Don't say that, otherwise I'll have to say Ariane. But,
Ariane.
What, Kerr?
Kerr. That's better. Rrr, Kerr.
Kerr.
Well, that's better, yes.
Yeah. No, somewhere in my family, the...
Sorry.
What
is
that?
That says somebody calling me from Kenya.
One of your men friends, is it?
One of my... one of my African friends from Kenya.
We're talking about racism. I did my one and only trip to Calcutta. We were forced to overnight in Calcutta because the clouds wouldn't allow us to actually land in Bhutan. Mm-hmm. I like to drop in the name Bhutan just to show I've been to Bhutan.
Uh-huh. Yes.
We couldn't land in Bhutan because they couldn't get through the clouds. We had to overnight in Calcutta. And I thought, Calcutta's supposed to be the armpit of the world. So I got a taxi driver who showed me around Calcutta at night.
Whoa.
And my... God, the racism that was going on. He was going on about bloody Bangladeshis and all. Yep. And also, I mean, there's racism. There certainly was racism in this country where the West Indian 1950s immigrants hated the 1960s. East African Asian immigrants. And that's bizarre. I don't know where we're going here.
Neither do I. Can I have another rant?
Yes.
Still on comedy. But
Still
on comedy. Because I know somebody... I noticed in the blurb that you put in, apparently I'd said last time that British comedy is going down the tubes.
Yes.
I don't remember saying that.
Direct quote, bizarrely, yes.
I don't remember saying that. Was it Sunday night, I watched the Channel 4 comedy gala.
Was that the show where people were actually had large tubes and they weren't falling down them?
I can't believe... I kept dipping in and giving up with a sob, turning over, and then coming back. I don't know what is happening. I don't know what specifically is happening, but it's something horrible, and it's something to do with the industrialization of comedy and comics. But there were three specific examples are three young comics who, when I saw them, they had a real they had a voice. They had a wonderful voice, and you think, this is fantastic. This could be where, if this is where comedy is going, that's great. And I watched the three of them on whatever night it was, Sunday night, Saturday night. Kevin Bishop has turned into some terrible mush. They've all basically turned into the same comic. They've all turned into the same comic, and they're all doing what, you know, they would, what broadly would be termed observational comedy, but... You know, they no longer have their own voice. I'm talking about Kevin Bishop and Sean Walsh and Josh Widdicombe. Particularly Josh and Sean, I used to think, were you know, both very young, but they both had tremendous voices and personalities and kind of life views which gave their comedy a real flavour. You know, a real personal flavour, and now they've just all become part of a mush, and they are doing what I think would broadly be termed observational comedy. Now, observational comedy very often is seen as the lowest common denominator, and, you know, anyone can do it. Observational comedy is not just about observing something and then saying it. That's like old people in cars. You know, you see old people in cars and they'll go, oh, Argos, uh-huh. Oh, Greg's the Baker's. They kind of see something and say it. That is not observational comedy. That is quite dull and eventually irritating. When you're a great observational comic, it's about taking something that you see, that everybody sees, and compressing it and honing it and shaping it till it's like a little diamond, which you drop in front of your audience, and they go, Oh my God, I've noticed that too. It's not just seeing it and then telling somebody else you've seen it and hoping that they've seen it too. Sean's set was a hugely derivative, or, you know, ridiculously derivative piece about how in this day of watching what you eat and everything, ordering bread is a bit like asking for a line of Coke. Now, that is, you know, it's almost repetitive more than derivative. Kevin's was about tortilla wraps. Again, it was about taking tortilla wraps and using them like cigarette papers. And instead of rolling a joint, you're rolling a massive tortilla. And I kind of completely forget what Josh was talking about, but they were all so... I'm not saying everyone needs to have a message, but if you don't have a message, you have to have form, you have to have craft, you have to be clever. And the cleverer you are, I believe, the less your cleverness shows. So everybody thinks they can be Michael McIntyre, they really can't. This was just turning into a kind of sliced white bread mush. And the audience were laughing a bit, but not hilariously, because they were at a comedy gala, and these were comics off the telly. And so the thing to do at a comedy gala with comics off the telly is laugh, because if you're not laughing, then it probably means you're not getting it. It was horrific and deeply, deeply, deeply depressing. Then there was, what's his name, Alex Booker from The Last Leg, who I don't think was even a comic. He came on and did really quite a cringe-making 5 minutes to introduce Josh Widdicombe. And even he looked uncomfortable. But this is the biggest, kind of the biggest on-screen comedy event of the year. And if this formless, fibreless comedy sausage factory mush is the best that television comedy can do, then, you know, it genuinely is doomed. If I hadn't, you known the names of the acts and they hadn't been boomed out, please welcome to the stage, you wouldn't know which was which. Their sets were entirely interchangeable, and that is unforgivable. To have so little of you in your set that you can no longer tell, you know, who the comic is. Now, that might be a tiny bit forgivable if you're an open act and you still don't have your own voice and you're thinking, ooh, I really like Jack Whitehall and he's in a movie now, so if I become like Jack Whitehall, maybe I can be in a movie too. And so you're a bit Jack Whitehall-ish and you're doing posh stuff about your dad and your school. Okay, that's understandable till you find your feet. But these guys, and they're the three that I saw before, and I saw Kerry Godleman, who was actually better than any of them, but still, it was nothing. It was, again, very derivative stuff about how women demand more from their friends than men do. That's been said 100 ways, 100 times. But still, she was the best. Out of those 4 or 5, she was the best. But to have 3 comics who I saw, you know, come through. I remember when Josh did his first show. It was extraordinary. He was fabulous. It was kind of round about a little bit after Tom Wrigglesworth and Sean at the same time. And then Sean did that brilliant, brilliant show, which didn't win the award, but arguably should have. What was it called? It was about him lying in. They had a voice. They found the voice. They spoke in the voice. It was fantastic. And now they've gone, well, we're not bothered doing that anymore. We'll just turn into panel show trash. And so that's okay while we're on a panel show, because other people are writing that and it's all heavily edited. And not that gala wasn't heavily edited, but you go up to do, and now here's Josh, here's Sean. They're just all one mushy, white, middle class. Oh, it was so depressing and anger-making to see what could have been, you know, the great hope of the next, or even this young generation of comics, just throw it all away because they have become so smug and so, well, we'll do a bit of this, bit of that. And it's kind of a one-size-fits-all comedy. And I understand that comics are pushed that way by television, by big management. I understand that because they want one size to fit all, because then all will buy that one size. But if you have a voice, if you have a brain, if you are a proper comic, you don't let yourself be squished into that one size fits all. And they all are. And it was horrible to watch.
So there you are, Kate Copstick, mellowing with age.